You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Earth Station 1 podcast. That's right, folks. We are going to get groovy tonight, folks. That's right, baby. We are going all back to the 1960s, and we are going to be talking about the Fab Four, the Beatles, the young lads from Liverpool, the Mop Tops, the guys who are true legends in the rock and roll industry, and to some people, lasted way too short. And it's just amazing to think about what they accomplished in pretty much less than 10 years. You know, some bands have been around for decades and they haven't even eclipsed to the success of what the Beatles have done. And we are going to have a great time talking all about it and figuring out which one is the cute one, which one is the funny one, which one is the shy one, and which one's the drummer. That's right, what we have to say. And speaking of the drummer, the man who drums his way into Earth Station 1 every week, my co-host, my compadre, Mr. Mike Gordon.
Howdy.
How are you, my friend?
Beatlemania is running wild, brother.
Oh, I didn't expect you to take that turn. Wow. Wow.
It's crazy. It's going to be fun. I mean, we've got some great guests to talk all about the Beatles, and yeah, we don't expect to even scratch the surface, but it's going to be fun because the Beatles have brought a lot to the table, and it's going to be interesting to see what everybody attaches themselves to as far as they're concerned, because there's so much. But of course, you have your memories. I have mine. You know, the Beatles are gear. It's nice to go back to the 60s. And speaking of that, of course, I have to wish you a happy birthday, sir.
I'm not anywhere near 60, sir.
No, but you were born then.
Yeah, so were you.
We're going back to the years of young Faber, young director Faber.
Yeah, you had to remind me. I thought I had put that in the past. No. Yeah. No birthday. No, go away. No birthday.
We are celebrating the fact that you have made it with us and survived another year, sir.
It's always surprising when that happens, actually. It really
Well, these days, you can't take anything for granted, right?
Nope. Every day I get up and look at the newspaper and say, all right, what did he do this time?
No. You look at the newspaper and you say, I read the news today. Oh, boy.
Oh, I'm not 64 yet, so it's okay.
Yes. Now, well, how many Beatles references can we get into this opening segment?
Oh, you're such a nowhere man. All right.
I'm just a paperback writer.
Yes, you are. You are a paperback writer. And you know, but you know, I'm here while my guitar gently sleeps. So hey. And speaking of sleeping guitars, we want to hear from you guys. Please write us. We have a brand new email address. That's right, folks. I was about to tell you that. We have a brand new email address. We've changed it once again on you. That's right. Because, you know, we like pulling the rug out from underneath you while you least expect it. We are now earthstation1@esonetwork.com. Pretty official there. And that is going to be our email address for the... probably for quite a while now. So earthstation1@esonetwork.com.
Send us email.
Please, we'd love to hear from you guys. Send us your favorite Beatles pictures. Send us, you know, your memories of the Beatles. We definitely want to hear from you guys. Or, hey, call us. Talk to us. Call us at 404-963-9057. So please call us at that number. We definitely want to hear from you, all your Beatles memories. And now... Alex has someone special hanging out with him. He wants to talk to him. So let's welcome Alex Autry to the show.
Mike, it's a pleasure to be here. Always a thrill to be a member on board the ESO. We are very, very fortunate. As you know, I'm a huge Disney fan. And when there's nothing on television or I just need a little escape, I jump on YouTube and I try to find some cool Disney vlogs. and happened to come upon an amazing family out of California, and they're called, and they're the Hayes family, and it's Zach and Ashley and their daughter Malaya. And we are fortunate to have Zach and Ashley Hayes with us today. Guys, welcome to Earth Station One.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You guys have put together basically a year's worth of trips to Disneyland on your YouTube channel. You guys do your shows in you know, 10 to 20 minute blocks with your daughter Malaya. And I was just kind of curious, for starters, who is the biggest Disney fan in the house?
Who would you say, Zachy?
Obviously Ashley is.
Yeah, because I'm a big Disney fan myself. And the fact is in one of your early vlogs, you actually shoot from inside your house. And in the background, there's a print of Walt Disney himself.
Yes.
And I'm like, you know, I'm a big fan, but I don't have a picture of Walt in my house.
So that was a Christmas gift for Ash. I contacted a guy on Instagram who's a custom painter, and he does portraits. Yeah. And it was like 3 weeks before Christmas, and he said Walt Disney was a huge inspiration for him, and he'd never been able to paint him before, and he promised me he'd get it before Christmas so I could give it to Ash.
I cried.
And it was perfect, yeah.
Oh, see, there you go. Now, as I recall early on, you guys took a trip. You decided that you're in, what, Sacramento? Is that right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So you guys are in Sacramento. It's not a short drive.
No.
To Anaheim.
definitely not right around the corner.
No, it's not. And you can't exactly just jump on one of the buses and just go. But you guys decided to do an annual pass and yes. and vlog your adventures. How exactly did the vlogs get started? What launched this idea for you guys?
Do you want to say it, maybe?
Yeah, okay. Well, in November of 2016 is when Malia was officially diagnosed by our dermatologist with alopecia areata. And just to give a brief on that, alopecia areata is an autoimmune condition that mainly affects the head, the head areas of hair. So your scalp, you know, the hair on top of your head, as well as your eyelashes and your eyebrows. So that is the type of alopecia Malia has. Mm-hmm. So when this happened, we did a lot of research on it. And we, ironically, like most people, we watch a lot of YouTube and we watch a lot of families. And we went on a hunt to try to find a family who supports their alopecia, just to kind of allow Malia to see someone else that lives in the same type of element as her. And we were unsuccessful. We couldn't find anybody other than people talking about knowledge about alopecia, or adults specifically, no children. So we kind of took it upon ourselves to, well, maybe if we did it, maybe there are other families out there who are looking for the same thing that we are, and we could help them in some shape or form. So why Disney? We get asked that a lot. Mm-hmm. it's our happy place. As a family, we have a blast together there. It's not super close, but it's not that far from us. And as you can see from this past year, it has truly, truly amazingly helped Malia's confidence. Yeah. It has made her a much more confident and brave little girl. And we just hope that that can help anyone else that's struggling with alopecia to just live their lives knowing that it's okay to be bald. It's not the worst thing in the world. You're beautiful. Mm-hmm. And so that's mainly the reason why we started vlogging.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, for those who haven't seen your vlog, Malaya is your daughter. She is 4 right now, correct?
Yes.
She's about to have her 5th birthday, though.
Yes.
See, I watched the videos. So at that age, that's a very early time to start developing who you are. And I can imagine that when you're dealing with something like this, where you're going to look different than everybody else, that it would be very easy to become very enclosed, very internal.
Yes.
Yeah.
And not be outspoken. And obviously, as you mentioned, it looks like, just by watching the videos, that Disneyland itself, and more importantly, the cast members of Disneyland have really opened up not only their hearts, but kind of opened up Malaya's world.
Yeah.
As far as she clearly has never meets a stranger now.
Right.
But I'm like, in the early vlogs, like, there are some times when she doesn't want to go near Mickey.
Right.
Oh, yeah. She was definitely afraid of Mickey in the beginning.
You can watch her whole progression. Yeah.
Yeah. Explain how the Disney cast members kind of. I don't know if they came to you or they just wanted to be. I used to be a Disney cast member. I worked at one of the Disney stores. So I understand the idea of the magic moments and everything like that. But it's like they give you the keys to the kingdom when you walk in.
Well, do you want to explain our story with Mark and like kind of why it evolved?
Mark is amazing.
Yes.
Mark is amazing.
He's an amazing guy.
Our family. We've told him you're stuck with us. You're family forever.
it really started. We have this, I call him the unsung hero. His name is Greg. He's an older man.
Yes.
He's retired, you know, from a normal 9-to-5, and he works at Disneyland now just as kind of a hobby and to have fun. And we were first in line for a show. We waited for like an hour. We got up to the front because I promised Ash we'd get good seats. And we just started talking with him, and we were chit-chatting back and forth, and he was playing with Malia, and we mentioned how we had come to the show, like, 4 or 5 times, and we'd never been able to sit in the front row. And he was like, oh, okay, well, give me a second. He walked away, came back, said, this guy is taking over my shift, and he's going to be able to help you guys out. And we had no idea what that meant. Mm-hmm. So basically, Mark took us to the very front row, sat us down, and was like, hey, after the show, come get me, and we'll go. You know, we'll go find some things to do. And me and Ash are just like, what in the world is going on? What the heck's going on? So show ends, we find Mark, and we just go on this crazy adventure. And not only is it the cast members that have changed Malia, but it's the characters that really have come into play and changed her. Mm-hmm. So like you said before, she was afraid of Mickey.
Mm-hmm.
Basically any fur character,
character she's fine with.
She was okay with like princesses and stuff, but any cartoon characters she was very weary of. She wasn't going to go near him.
Mm-hmm.
And we happened to run into Belle and the Beast, and they were like, hey, do you want to walk with us? And Malia was like, nope, not going near you. And so Mark did some really cool stuff for us. He took us to see princesses, and the cool thing about Mark was he came with us. He visited princess with Malia. It wasn't just like, hey, here, you cut the line. He waited with us and went with us and hung out with these princesses with us. And that was the cool thing about Mark. And it eventually came down to, we got to the carousel, which you've probably seen, Alex, and
one of my favorite scenes.
And Belle was like, hey, just bring him over here. And Ash and I were like, what does she mean, bring him over here? Yeah. And the other cast member, Dominic, was like, yeah, you guys are going to hop on with her.
Another great cast member.
Yeah, Dominic is another pivotal, you know, person in
another
the story.
Another family member
of
ours now.
And this is where it all changed, because Malia's kind of the kind of kid where if you're like, hey, do you want to go do this? And if she's a little timid, she'll say no. But if you're near that thing and you're like, hey, let's go do it, she'll do it. So she wouldn't walk with the Beast originally, but when we get on the carousel, he's standing right behind her and he put his hand on her back for the whole carousel ride. And that really like brought her in.
But he cares. He's gentle. He's like a gentle giant.
So she went from being scared of Mickey Mouse to, at the end of the carousel ride, she was holding hands with the Beast walking around Disneyland. And that changed everything. That was like the moment that changed Malia for the next 12 months. That was it. Oh, go ahead, Alex. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, one of the things that I like about watching these videos is that you guys managed to capture the moments of sheer joy on your daughter's face.
Yeah.
These moments of sheer amazement. Y'all watch the the Lights of Color show? And honestly, I think the video just shows her face for most of it. And it's just, you know, and it's more entertaining to me in the long run because she's just so expressive. You guys have, I mean, there, y'all have videotaped some interesting stuff in the last year. You've had, you've basically spent a day with Peter Pan.
Yes.
That was unexpected.
the number of face characters, princesses and otherwise, who know you by name.
Yeah.
Has got to, I love the Captain Jack Sparrow.
Yeah.
Because it looks like he actually like leaves another family
to come and say hi.
Yeah.
He did, and we were at the top of the Mark Twain at that point, and for a good 5 minutes, I was, it's not on film, but I was hollering for him just to see if he would notice the Mark Twain at all, and he didn't once turn around, and I have no clue what made him actually turn around at that moment when he not just yelled towards us, but specifically outed Malia, and it was incredible.
Walked at the end of the pier.
Yes.
And we've never met him.
We
still don't know how that even happened.
Yeah. It just goes to show the power of the connection of cast members. Mm-hmm. Everyone has spread the word of who Malia is and what her condition is, more importantly.
Yeah.
And we always do our best to show them how grateful we are for how much love they give Malia, because they literally have open arms for us every time we're there. They're family to us and vice versa. And that's why we try to give them, like, the blue bracelets is what everybody in the park wants.
Yeah. You have a video in which somebody actually says, are y'all the ones that give away the wristbands?
Yeah.
And they say yes. And the woman freaks out. She's like, I watch your videos.
Yeah.
Which is the nicest compliment that you can get. But y'all have managed to actually meet up with some other major vloggers. You guys have hung out with Fresh Baked.
Yes.
You've hung out with Brian Hull.
Yes.
And that is a wonderful set of videos because I'm shaped like Winnie the Pooh, so he's my favorite character. what's been your favorite moment? What's been your number one of the last year moment that's on your vlog?
What do you want to answer?
You can say yours. I'll say mine.
My favorite would probably be when Malia got invited to be in the parade. That's something I never ever heard of in my entire life, as big of a Disney fan as I am, and nor have I ever seen anything like that. And the way that they treated her throughout the entire parade, to this day she still talks about it. And I didn't think she was going to do it. Malia, she's very confident and she puts herself out there, but like sometimes she can get really shy, and I thought she was honestly going to chicken out and not hold the rope. But she went right with Dolly and right up to that rope, and she actually walked a long distance. And I didn't think she finished it out. And I was so proud of her for allowing all those people to watch her and walking that distance. And she felt proud of herself. She was like, I was in the parade. What about you, honey?
Okay. Sorry, Malia was
whispering. Okay.
favorite moment? Well, one of the best moments for me, I think, was, and it was right before the moment Ashley was talking about, and it was when we met Lexi. It's a cast member that has alopecia herself.
Okay.
And it was for months, people have been saying, like, hey, have you met Lexi? Have you seen Lexi? Like, she's a parade performer. Do you know who she is? Have you met her? And every time we're like, no, we've never met her. We've never seen her. And then right before the parade, the cast member Dolly, who runs the parade, she was like, hey, you know, Lexi will be here. Would you like to meet her? And I was like, yeah, of course we would. That would be incredible. And not only did we get to meet her that night, but now she hangs out with us every time we go. And
oh, wow. Part of your family.
Yes. And it really gave, it gave Malia, for me, it's really important that she saw, because she always says, I want to be a cast member. So I thought it was a huge door to open for her to see a grown woman with alopecia like herself, but who's also a cast member. I thought that was really groundbreaking for her. Yeah,
and a performer.
And then we saw her in the parade. So yeah,
and Malia thought that was incredible.
That was a big thing for me.
I still cry when I see that part when Lexi walks up to her. I still cry.
Yeah.
I actually have that video paused right now on my screen.
Aww.
So I'm looking forward to watching that in just a couple of minutes once we're done here. Hayes family, we can't thank you enough for coming and joining with us this week on Earth Station One. How can people follow you, and how can people learn more about alopecia awareness?
Okay, well, and to find us, you can find us on both Instagram and on Facebook at Hayes Family Vlog. Our Twitter account's a little bit different. The handle is at AZHayesVlogs. Mm-hmm. And then to learn more about alopecia, you want to visit the NAAF.org. Yep. There you'll find all the information. It's a very, very large supportive community. There are tons of events that go on and even camps for kids. It's an incredible support system.
Yep, and we're just Hayes Family Vlog on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's an absolute honor to get the opportunity to talk to you. We love having you on.
Well, thank you very much. This is an honor for us.
Truly, thank you.
Really, really cool.
You're part of the alopecia awareness. So.
I personally, for me, I look forward to watching more of your videos. I can't wait to see what happens with Malia next. we just thank you guys for coming on and joining us.
Thank you guys very much. Thank you, Mike and Mike. We appreciate it.
Yes.
It's our pleasure. No, great having you guys on, and you know, just continue the work you guys are doing. It's inspirational to a lot of people, I'm sure.
Thank you very much.
That is awesome. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in a moment with the Geek Seat.
It's been a
Hi, this is Ashley Pauls with this week's Box Office Buzz. We don't have a whole lot in theaters this week as we're still kind of in the middle of winter and movie studios aren't releasing a lot of big movies, but we do have a film called Winchester, which is a suspense mystery about a legendary haunted house near San Francisco. This claims to be inspired by true events and stars Helen Mirren as the heiress Sarah Winchester, who builds a strange house to trap some very dangerous ghosts. I actually looked up the real-life Winchester Mystery House and found it's apparently a tourist attraction, and there are claims that it's haunted by ghosts of those killed by the famous Winchester rifles. So, take that as you will. And that's actually about it for wide releases this weekend, which means it might be a good time to get caught up on some of those recently announced Oscar-nominated films, if you haven't seen those yet, and that's something you're interested in. The 2018 Academy Awards ceremony will be broadcasted March 4th, so you still have plenty of time to see some of those Best Picture nominees before them. On DVD this week, we have the movie Boo 2, A Madea Halloween. I'm not sure how many people are in the mood to watch a Halloween movie in the winter, but it's there if you're interested. And there's a movie that I'm kind of interested in but didn't get a chance to see called Professor Marston and the Wonder Woman, which is based on the life of psychologist and Wonder Woman comic creator William Marston. So if you loved the Wonder Woman solo movie from last summer, you might want to check this out to find out the real-life story behind the creator of the comic. And that's actually it for this week. If you're looking for more entertainment-related content to tide you over till Marvel's Black Panther finally gets here in a couple weeks, you can check out my blog, boxofficebuzzab.wordpress.com.
Hey everyone, welcome back. Now it's time for the Geek Seat segment, and our victim, guest this weekend is actually a friend of the show, and he's a contributor to the ESO Network webpage, and he's a friend of ours from Dragon Con. Let's welcome Michael Faulkner.
Hey, you know, I've been around the station a little bit. I've seen the most of Doctor Who's side, but this room, I've never been in here before.
Well, welcome. Make yourself not too much at home, but there's a There's no shortage of Mikes and Michaels around here, that's for sure. So this might be the first time we've ever had two Michael Effers, though, as well. So we'll have to just make sure that, you know, the balance is right. So
we won't even talk about the MF jokes, you know. No.
Right, exactly.
No.
So, well, cool. Well, welcome. No, it's been a long time coming, getting you on the show. So welcome. For those people who may not be familiar with you, tell us a little bit about, you know, yourself.
Oh, goodness. Well, I'm a writer and podcaster from here in the Atlanta area. I've been doing some work with the Chronic Rift Network, mostly with the Weekly Podioplex, which is my movie news show that I do every week. It's about 15 to 30 minutes every Tuesday, Wednesday, somewhere around that time frame. So, you know, life catches up and sometimes you don't get these things off in the right order. But I've also been doing the Timestamps project on Creative Criticality, which is my blog, and also cross-posting to ESO. And that's a look at Doctor Who from the very beginning of the franchise. And I've been working forward episode by episode, actually up into the 22nd season now. In fact, The Two Doctors goes live this week.
I am so, so sorry.
I know.
Oh, man. A little spoiler for the blog this week. it was painful. But people may also know me from Dragon Con. I've been going there since, 2009? And actually just got picked up again for attending professionals, my third year doing that. So I'll be there again this year.
Congratulations, sir.
Yeah, absolutely. Congratulations. I know that we've had the pleasure of been on panels together multiple times.
Yes, we have.
So, and that's always fun. Speaking of Dragon Con, do you have any... you know, particular fond memories of any particular panels of in general?
Most of my stuff I do at the con is on the American Sci-Fi Classics track. You know, I do love a lot of the stuff from the late 70s, early 80s time frame. But I also like hanging out with you guys, you know, shameless plug there with the Doctor Who track, the Brit track. Mm-hmm. Talking Cybermen this last year was quite fun. And I really like the energy on that panel where, you know, we're all out there talking. We're also engaging with the audience. It's a lot of the fun that I like to do at cons is, you know, is really get engaged with the people. And, you know, we're all on the same wavelength. We're all fans. And it's really good to talk and share our passions. So
the Timestamp project, is that one? Are you a more recent sort of fan of Doctor Who? Or is this just sort of like, no, I want to go from the beginning and I might as well document it while I'm doing that?
I actually got started with Doctor Who, I think it was in 2000, I want to say 8 or 9, when it was on Netflix. And it was just the new stuff, you know, from Eccleston forward.
Yeah.
And my wife and I just sat down and said, okay, we've heard all our friends talking about this. Let's give it a shot and see how it goes. And we started with Eccleston and barreled forward. And before we knew it, we were done. And we're like, there's got to be more here. Kept waiting for the new Matt Smith stuff to show up and then, you know, kept going with that. And as I started talking to more fans and kind of exploring that, you know, and diving into different areas of it, I started kind of going back and watching. Netflix had a couple of the episodes for each Doctor, like the Aztecs or the First Doctor and so on. And so I'd watch those, but they really didn't have any context to them because they were so serialized. And so I actually got a hold of some friends and said, okay, what can I do? You know, I want to see what this is all about. What can I do to get started? And I end up with copies of pretty much everything from, you know, Ground Zero going forward. And I've been watching those and I thought, you know, this would be really fun to do a blog about. And it started out just as like, you know, 50 to 200 words of this is what I thought about it. This is why they're called timestamps. It's Gary Mitchell who came up with that name. And I've realized going forward that I'm into the, you know, 1,000, 1,500, 2,000 word. They just keep growing and growing because there's so much to talk about as you go further along.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yes, there is. we've centered a whole podcast around it.
Yes.
So we have, and there's so many out there. And they're all quite good and quite different. So I say prior to Doctor Who, but in addition to Doctor Who, then what are some of your earlier fandoms that you embraced early on?
You know, my earliest memory is sitting with my dad on, I think it was Sunday mornings. You know, we get some breakfast together. Usually it was a, you know, bowl of cereal or something. And they had on Fox 13 in Salt Lake City, Utah, it was reruns of Lost in Space and Star Trek, the original series. And that was my dad's sci-fi. That was what he experienced in his childhood. And so he was introducing me to sci-fi through his eyes. And it was, you know, Lost in Space and Star Trek, the original series. In fact, I had, you know, a box of Legos. And one day I'm like, hey, Dad, you know, can we build the Enterprise out of what we got here? He's like, we could try. I don't know if we can get there. And then from there, you know, like TNG came up, you know, Next Generation came along, and my parents weren't as enthused about that. So I kind of ventured off on my own journey through Star Trek aside from that. But you know, it's just as sci-fi stuff came up and the genre stuff like Batman 66, about the same time as Batman and Batman Returns came to theaters in the late 80s, early 90s, FX was starting up, and they had had Batman 66 and the Green Hornet back to back every night. Ooh. And that was my parents were like, hey, check out this Batman. You've got Michael Keaton on the screen, but this was our Batman. And I fell in love with that too, because it was just so fun. So campy, but so fun.
This just reminds me how young you are. It's
I know. I'm a proud Gen Xer, man.
Yeah. But that's cool. But it's cool to embrace. I mean, look, I mean, I love a lot of that stuff too. And even though most of it was going off the air right when I was born, I still like geek out over Batman 66 and the original Star Trek, Get Smart, Adam's Family, that kind of stuff. Like that really, really excites me because it was, you know, I mean, it was going into syndication when I was younger, but I mean, I think a lot of that stuff holds up still.
Yeah, it does. It really does. I mean, there are some aged parts to it. I mean, there are certain episodes of Star Trek you look at and you're like, I can't believe they did that back then. Right. But there's a lot of it there that, you know, it still has the same you know, morality tales and meaning to it that it had back then. I mean, you can still translate a lot of the stuff about the Vietnam War and everything else forward to now and still gain a lot of lessons from it.
There's some of those stories where you're like, man, they couldn't tell that now. They wouldn't tell that now.
Right.
Like, yeah, it's amazing. So, well, very cool. Well, it's great to have you here. But of course, you know, entrance has its price. So without further ado, Mike, I believe he is warmed up and ready to roll into the geek seat.
Are you really sure he's ready?
As ready as he'll ever be.
Okay. You know, because, you know, he is a member of, you know, the newbies, and, you know, they have that freshness seal to them, and, you know, the knots might slip off of him or something.
You know, I mean, look, it's going to take its toll regardless, so.
Yeah, that's true. You know, he thinks he's going to get away with this, but nope. All right, Michael, you ready for your first question in the geek seat?
Let's do it. I have one question for you. Is it supposed to tingle like this, or is that a burning? I can't tell.
It gets worse.
It just gets worse. It gets better. It gets worse depending on your attitude.
Mm-hmm, right. Exactly. Some people have said more, more, more. Others have said no, no, no. But you know, we'll see at the end of this interview how it goes.
All right,
Mr. Michael, your first question is: what was your favorite geek out moment?
You know, it used to be seeing my first Star Wars film in theaters. I was 1986 or so when I caught them on VHS, pan and scan, and then saw the special editions in 97. And I was like, oh, this is so awesome. I've never seen this before. But then I went to Dragon Con for the first time in 2009. And it was a combination of being overwhelming because you're walking in, you're like, holy crap. And then it's also like a feeling like you're coming home. And that was really like, that was it for me. And I knew then I was going back to the con every year. So that ranks right up there as one of my favorites.
I could totally see that. But also let's look at what was your most disappointing geek out moment.
The date was May 5th, 1993. And the world found out that Sam Beckett was never coming home.
Oh,
Quantum Leap's finale. I was in love with Quantum Leap, and I understood later. I mean, it was doubly disappointing when I found out that the ending was on the fly, but I understood why they did it that way. And the sixth season that was planned for it was just like, oh, come on, guys, I want to see this. But just that heartbreak where my heart dropped out through my feet. Like, what? The whole point was him trying to get home. No.
just like Gilligan's Island. They go back to the island. They never get home.
Oh, boy.
Exactly.
What geeks you out the most?
Doing basically this right now. What we do in podcasting, what we do at Dragon Con, is discovering new and exciting properties and getting a chance to engage with people, talk about other fellow fans, and share that passion.
No, I totally agree completely. And that's part of the fun, is doing this. You know, we've been doing this almost 8 years, and if we didn't enjoy it, we need to be in a psychiatric ward or something like that. What turns your geek off?
Along the same lines, you know, I believe that there is room in the world for all the things that we have a passion for, all the things that we like, you know, whether it be, you know, Star Wars or Twilight. But my biggest turnoff is fans who translate that passion into attacking each other and harming each other over our views and over our likes and dislikes. That's, you know, as a new movie comes out or something like that, and people start, you know, criticizing the movie, that's fine, but they start attacking each other. I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. This is not what we're made of, guys. We need to back off.
No, agree completely. And that's the one major ugly side of geekdom.
Yeah.
There's other ugly sides, but this is one of the worst things about it. What fictional character would you like to meet the most?
There are so many. And that was the hardest part about this entire range of questions was, you only want one? Come on. Two recent ones that match up with my worldview and beliefs were Doctor Strange, especially the movie version, and then Qui-Gon Jinn from Star Wars. And if I had to choose just one, it would be Qui-Gon Jinn.
Oh, sure. Okay. I could totally see that. What fictional character would you not like to meet?
In general, anyone who wants to make me dead in a hurry. The top of my list for that one is honestly the Master, because not only will he make you dead, but he's going to brainwash you, hypnotize you in the process, and make you do things you don't want to do.
Or make you very teeny tiny.
Right.
And then squash you.
But then people will think, oh, look at that doll. It's adorable. I didn't know they were making Michael Faulkner action figures.
Ooh. Ooh, that opens a whole new door.
Maybe it's not the worst. Okay. What is your favorite geek word, phrase, quote, or pose?
I say fantastic like the Ninth Doctor on a daily basis, but I know it's not my favorite because it's really kind of a normal phrase that you can just, you know, work in. And I try to, I like phrases and stuff that you can work in, and someone catches it like, ha ha, geek. I'm like, you got me. So as a Star Wars fan, my favorite is May the Force Be With You, which is a lot harder to sneak into than conversations.
Thank you for seeing me for this job interview. Oh, no problem, Michael. Hope you have a great day. May the Force be with you. That would be something at least they would remember.
That's right.
What is your ideal geek occupation?
Probably Starfleet engineer or scientist, but any era but Jim Kirk's, because you get the benefit of boldly going and keeping the ship afloat. But in Picard or Sisko or Janeway's era, you're less likely to die.
Exactly.
Unless you're wearing a red shirt.
Right.
If you're an engineering man, I don't know. That's full of red shirts.
Oh, man. I don't even know how to answer that one. What geek occupation would you not like to do?
Hands down, holodeck cleaning crew on a Federation starship.
Well, you would hope that, you know, since everything is solid in the holodeck, it all disappears, you know, away with that other stuff. So it's right. Cleaned automatically.
All right, let's move on. Just like, yeah, this where this is going, there's nothing good that can come of this.
I would love to see Mike Gordon's face right now.
Oh yes.
What is your ultimate geek fantasy? Remember, this is your final question, so you got to make it count.
Yeah. You know, I would love to actually work on or contribute to some of the properties that I love, you know, like writing or production teams for movies or television series. You know, it's fun to be on the outside where we are doing all the analysis and, you know, talking about it and stuff, but to actually be inside those creative circles and actually contributing to it, making that history, that would be amazing work.
Oh, sure. Of course. To be able to be part of the who's who, who's what with creating something that you just love.
Yeah.
You know, that's why we have you part of the network now, you know, because we're hoping to get you into that part.
And thank you for that. I appreciate it.
Well, you're tied up to the geek seat and we're not planning on letting you go anytime soon. So with that being said, Mr. Michael Faulkner, you have made it through the geek seat. Congratulations.
Hey, I'm a survivor.
Oh, don't get too happy yet. Mr. Mike Gordon, tell the young man what he's won.
You have won a lifetime subscription to the ESO Network, a value easily worth $16.07.
Ooh, we're going up again. Yay. Yeah, well, you know. Well, of course, we have classy people in the geek seat. Of course we have.
That's right. That's
exactly.
Right.
And so, now I'm blushing.
So, Michael, do you have any cons or anything you're going to be going to, or how can people find you?
In the near future, not necessarily any cons or anything. It won't be until Labor Day for Dragon Con again. Going back there as an attending pro, you'll probably be able to find me on the Sci-Fi Classics track or the American Sci-Fi Fantasy Media track with Kelly, doing modern stuff like Arrow and the Berlantiverse and that kind of thing. If there's an opening, probably back on the Brit track again as well. One place you can definitely find me at Dragon Con is in the Dragon Con Newbies events. It's one thing that I help out with Kevin Batchelder, Sue Kissenweather, and Kim McGibney, where we help newbies coming to the con for their first year or even in their second or third year, because there's always something new you can find at the con. Helping them find their way around, give them some tours, give them some pointers, some advice, and help them navigate the 60,000 to 80,000, fan crowd that is that con. And this usually happens on Thursday and Friday of the con, first thing. If you want to find me before the con, I'm on the Chronic Rift Network. That's at www.chronicrift.com. I'm the host of the weekly Podioplex, which is a movie news podcast. I'm also available at my blog, Creative Criticality. That's at creativecriticality.wordpress.com. You'll find me there with some of my other musings, but mostly the Timestamps project, where I'm about halfway through now. I think I calculated out, if they didn't make any more Doctor Who, which I hope they do, because I really want to see Jodie Whittaker do her thing. I'm about halfway through the entirety of Doctor Who proper. And then, if someone wants to find me elsewhere on social media, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter, I'm on Instagram, just out there doing my thing. One thing I'm not doing is MySpace, because I gave that up years ago.
Good on you. At least you've given that up. Well, thank you, Michael, and we do appreciate you being a writer for us and putting your reports up there with the Doctor Who stuff. It's awesome reviews.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Well, okay, kids, let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in a moment, and we are going to meet the Beatles.
Where are those transmissions you intercepted, including those of the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast? I need my weekly dose of sci-fi news with movie and TV reviews and commentary.
We intercepted no transmissions! This is a consular ship!
If this is a consular ship, where is the ambassador?
Sorry, I was indisposed.
I will give it a moment to air out, if you know what I mean.
Who needs the ambassador? I thought I heard someone call out for me. What in the bloody hell did you do to Ramus? Speak up! Which one of those chest buttons calls your supervisor, you imbecile?
Geez, mister. Honestly, he was, like that when we got here, right, fellas?
Mister, I am an ambassador.
Let me see your identification.
Shut it, Bob. You are as clumsy as you are stupid. He doesn't have to show you your ID.
We don't need to see his identification.
You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Libsyn.com, and Stitcher Radio. The Monster Sci-Fi Show is part of the ESO Network. It's sci-fi from a certain point of view.
With Sergeant Bedwiss, now we're hearts, blood, and
Welcome back, everyone. And now we're going to start this. You know, I think we've been doing this for, wow, Mike, I think we've been doing, well, obviously we've been doing the podcast for more than 7 years, and we've been focused so much on comic writers and comic artists and directors and other personalities, actors, other creative folks. But I don't think we've really gotten involved with spotlights on musicians. So this will be a brand new thing for us, but hopefully it'll be something that we continue.
It will not be the last. It will not be the last.
It will not be the last. And yeah, where better to start with than the Beatles, the Fab Four from England. With us to talk all about the Beatles is our iconic rock segment host herself, Michelle.
Hi.
Howdy. And we've also got our good friends Ricky and Bambi with us.
Hi there.
Hello.
We needed some musicians, some people who actually, like, you know, play music to as far as and you guys
since
were
he
the,
couldn't find anybody. He got.
I was gonna say you guys were the next best thing. No.
Yeah. Paul McCartney kept on turning us down. So you know.
So, look, this is a huge topic, and certainly we could do a podcast all about the Beatles just weekly and talk about something different every time. So we just want to make it this segment about our own personal thoughts about the Beatles and what the Beatles mean to us, as well as some fun stories that we've heard over the years, et cetera, et cetera. So let's start with Michelle. When were you like aware of the Beatles? What was your first memory of the Beatles?
My dad, who was a classical music guy his whole life, his forays into pop were few and far between. But he had one Beatles song that it was practically a theme song for him. It was Yesterday. And I still remember him like reshingling the roof when I was little, and the strains of Yesterday floating down between the hammer pounding on the roof.
Is this something that you had on like a 45, or was it
no,
a full album?
We did not have any Beatles records in the house. We did have, oddly, on the Apple label, my mom had Mary Hopkins, Those Were the Days on the Apple label, but I don't think we had any Beatles records in the house.
So this is just ones that you heard on the radio?
I don't know where Dad heard Yesterday, but good. He liked that one song. And people have asked me if I'm named after the Beatles, Michelle. Roughly the same era. I think I predate it by a few months, but no, I was not named for the song.
Gotcha. I thought we were all named after Beatles songs. No? Bambi, what about you?
I actually don't have a first memory of when I was introduced to the Beatles. They just kind of always were. I think, like, really thinking about it, they were kind of this intangible entity, I guess. I don't know. They were just always there. They always were around.
No,
like around on TV and stuff. They were this thing that existed.
I understand that completely. I mean, I sort of was trying to think of my earliest memory being like aware of them. And even though they were together for the first couple years that I was on the earth, I remember, like, the earliest memory that I can that I have is being in Sunday school, and we were learning just not hymns, but actually just like little songs, like little children's songs. And one of those children's songs was Yellow Submarine. So, I mean, as early as like just a couple years after, you know, while they were still, well, probably a couple years after they broke up. I mean, they were treating these songs like they were just standards that everybody knew.
Yeah.
Like I can't imagine a time when there was no Yellow Submarine or there was none of the Beatles songs.
It feels kind of like when's the first time you ever drank a glass of water? You know, I don't know. I've always had water. I can't put my finger on when the first time I actually was exposed to the Beatles.
That sounds so horrible, being exposed to the Beatles. It's like, there is no cure for it, so it's okay.
Beatlemania is running wild. What about you, Ricky?
Mine's interesting. My parents weren't big music people. They liked music, but in a more casual way than most of my friends now. So they weren't big fans of any rock bands. My mother always thought that Elvis Presley was far too risque, and the Beatles were even worse. But for some reason, my parents had this old suitcase record player. It was huge. Not one of those little toy ones, but like a giant record player up on these metal legs that folded into this plastic suitcase. And the only record that I remember having on this thing was a Beatles tribute band called the Bearcats playing early Beatles songs. And on the cover of the record, there was a comic book style illustration of the members of the Bearcats drawn as Beatles, the bug, with Beatles, the musician, heads. It was very strange. So my introduction to the Beatles was through a tribute band.
Wow.
Yeah. And I used to listen to that record all the time as a kid. It was in the basement, which was where my toys were. There was a room in the basement where it was like a playroom where all my toys were. And this record player was there with this one Beatles tribute album. And I would listen to that while I played.
My parents were of the Elvis is cool era. We had a lot of Elvis 45s growing up. As you well know, I was very much influenced by one in particular, Rockahula, baby.
Oh yeah.
There was among all the Elvis 45s that we had, there was one Beatles 45, and it was Hard Day's Night. And I think it was just there by accident. When I asked my parents about it, I don't think they remembered how they acquired it, but they just had it. So I don't even remember what's on the flip side of that one. But Mike, what about you?
Pretty much the same thing as with Bambi. It's like I don't remember the first time I was ever had the Beatles not in my life. It was always since I was a little kid. I remember growing up having the Beatles Blue album. Playing all the time, singing Octopus's Garden, Yellow Submarine, Sgt. Pepper, you know, probably 3 or 4 years old. And it's just always the Beatles. The Beatles were there as I grew up. And, you know, seeing the cartoon of Yellow Submarine and the Blue Meanies actually scared me when I was little. So it was just amazing stuff. And then seeing Help and loving that, and then just falling in love with the Beatles, and the Beatles since then have become a huge part in my life. You know, a lot of my friends know I'm really into music and have always appreciated all different types of music, all different styles, all different cultures, all even, you know, instruments worth. And it was like one of the first songs I ever learned how to play on the guitar in fourth grade was Yellow Submarine. They taught us it on the guitar. And it was like, I'm playing the Beatles. This is awesome. And it's great. The Beatles were always there, and they are always magic. And to me, if I'm ever in a bad mood, if I'm ever depressed or anything, just put on the Beatles and boom, it's gone. And I've always in a better place.
Wow. That's pretty cool. I mean, you can't say that about a lot of bands. And there's some Beatles tracks that I would be like, really? But but for the most part, I mean, most of their messages are very positive.
Oh, exactly.
One thing about the Beatles is the Beatles had such a wide range of music from the early poppier stuff to the later psychedelic stuff.
Yeah.
That you can go to different eras of the Beatles if you're in different frames of mind or looking for something different. It's not like a lot of bands where you have to be in this mood to listen to this band because that's all you get with them. With the Beatles, there's just such a wide spectrum of music there that there's almost something for any mood you could be in.
Yeah, they really did. Man, I mean, it's like I said, it's hard to imagine the world without them, and what you know, the innovations and as popular as they were, all the bands that sort of rose up after them, in a lot of ways, I think we're still, pop music is still like hugely influenced by them.
Oh, exactly. Like, and it's the interesting thing about it is you could hear the evolution of their musical talent from the, you know, rockabilly early stuff that they did, you know, from their very first couple albums, all the way to the pop stuff, and then into more, like Ricky put it, into more into the psychedelic, more mature musicians that they became towards the end.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, yeah. So in terms of after, you know, your first experience with them, when did you realize that, hey, I really like this band and I'm going to go out and purchase an album? Or have you, like, I mean, like for me, I always thought of them as just a standard, something that was always out there. Like I never had to buy the music because it was always there. Like you could just turn on the radio or someone would have a CD, or, you know, it was just like, oh, I never would think to buy that music because it's just always around. Although I think the first time I, other than that 45 that my parents had, yeah, I skipped vinyl altogether. And I didn't even have a cassette with Beatles music on it, although a friend of mine did in college. And it wasn't until I got a CD player and I got, I think the first Beatles CD that I ever purchased was Past Masters. Past Masters Volume 2, in fact. And namely because it had, that wacky little song, You Know My Name, on it. Look Up the Number, which was very Python-esque for me. I thought that was, like, as a big Monty Python fan, I thought that was, that song was just a great novelty song. But then a friend of mine gave me, every Christmas he would give me Beatles CDs. So I actually have quite a collection now. And, that was the first one I actually bought. Anybody else, Mike, did you buy music?
When I was younger, no, because my parents, you know, supplied it all. They had all the Beatles albums. But, you know, like I said, it was mostly, you know, listening to the best of stuff, you know, because that was their hits, and not knowing the other stuff. But they started playing and started, you know, we listened to the whole, you know, in road trips and stuff with the cassette players when they started becoming the big thing, listening to the cassettes of the Beatles and such. The first time I actually went out and actually purchased the Beatles is when they released Sgt. Pepper on CD the first time.
Gotcha.
And because it was a huge thing for them to put the Beatles on CD. And
yeah, they weren't out on CD for quite a while. When CDs first came out, you couldn't, at least they may have had them as imports, but at least in the United States, I don't think they had them at all for the first few years of CDs.
Mm-mm, no, they didn't. They purposely wanted the quality of the sound to get to a certain point. And they, you know, purposely did, you know, they made it a special event to release the Beatles CDs. And when they did, they did them like every couple months, they did three at a time. And Sgt. Pepper was the first one they put out. And then they worked, I think they then went back to the early ones and then worked their way up. And then they finally had the whole catalog.
Yeah. Michelle, did you actually ever buy any Beatles albums, any Beatles music?
This is embarrassing. No, I haven't.
Did you? and she's our music guru,
yeah,
here.
Yeah, it's like the air and the water. And what I have in my digital library came from you. So,
is there a particular album that stands out for you as one that is better than the rest?
I don't think I can answer that question. I really don't.
Wow.
How do you?
What about you, Bambi?
I actually, thinking about it, it's kind of embarrassing, but I remember I was at a flea market and I bought what I thought was the Beatles. Well, and it kind of was, but it turned out it was the soundtrack for the Sgt. Pepper's movie.
Oh, no. Oh, ow.
So my first purchase purchase of actually trying to buy the Beatles was a massive failure. But I did buy a CD that I got it from, I think it was like a pawn shop or a thrift store. I was young, but they sold me the CD, even though it didn't have any artwork or anything on it. It was just it turns out, I think it was from a box set, but you had to pay per disc. And the CD itself just had song titles. It didn't say who the bands were. So I purchased a CD that I think it had Eleanor Rigby on it, but it had like Simon and Garfunkel and like the Rolling Stones and a variety of other bands. But I remember recognizing some of, I think I Want to Hold Your Hand, that was one of the ones I recognized was the Beatles. But I was actually introduced to a few bands because of that purchase. But I did that. I guess technically that's the first time I actually purchased Beatles music.
As played by,
as
the Beatles.
Played by the Beatles.
I actually saw Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band movie in the drive-in when it came out. I don't remember hating it. And actually some of the covers on there aren't too bad.
Yeah, oh, I like Beatles. The Earth, Wind & Fire is brilliant.
I don't remember liking it.
Actually, I really liked A Day in the Life. I can't remember who it was that covered it, but I really liked it when I was a kid. So.
And that's the one with the Aerosmith cover of Come Together, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. I like Aerosmith, so that was a win for me.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, but, oh, man, the Bee Gees and Peter Frampton.
Yeah, it's not a good movie.
No.
I had a friend who loved that movie. We sat through it. We didn't leave the theater. We sat through two showings of it in the theater.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So you've paid your dues.
Yeah.
Yeah. You might not have bought an album, but you've paid your dues. Ricky, what about you?
Well, like I said, the first one that I listened to was the Bear Cuts Beatlemania tribute to the Beatles album.
Right.
That was just there. But the first Beatles purchase that I made, I thought I was buying a greatest hits cassette because it just said the Beatles, but it was the White Album. And coming from the Beatlemania album that was covers of I Want to Hold Your Hand and the early stuff, and then putting on a cassette version of the White Album where everything's out of order from the vinyl release, I was extremely confused because if you're familiar with the Beatles' White Album, it's not I Want to Hold Your Hand at all.
No, it's not.
So I did not get what I was expecting at all. And when Revolution Number 9 came on, I was just really confused. So first Beatles purchase, I thought, this is their greatest hits? It wasn't, actually. It was the White Album. And after that, I picked up more and more of their stuff on cassette and then on CD. And I own all of the American releases, which are different slightly than the British releases. But all of the American releases on CD of the original albums, and then the Red Album and the Blue Album and Past Masters 1 and 2 and some of the newer stuff like Let It Be Naked without all of the horns and stuff.
Oh, but it's so beautiful. It is beautiful.
Picked up, you know, the majority of the main stuff. I don't think you can ever pick it all up. There's so much out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's amazing how much stuff there is out there. Then you also have like Beatles Love. There's the soundtrack to the Circus Olay out in Vegas, and which is another remix of all the different songs, and it's just amazing stuff too. And then you had Beatles One, and then yeah, there's so much stuff out there you can keep on going.
Oh yeah,
absolutely. Well, as far as you know, since you guys actually play music, as far as learning Beatles songs, were there a particular Beatles songs that you guys learned early on that sort of like, this is, I want to play this song?
Yeah. Early on, I tried to learn Beatles songs. A friend of mine had a Beatles songbook, and I started out on bass guitar, But when I started playing acoustic guitar and just wanted to strum guitar and sing, I thought, well, who better than the Beatles? So a friend of mine let me borrow his Beatles songbook, and my hands would not make those chords. And there were lots of them. So I learned very early on that a lot of the Beatles songs that sound so simple and beautiful are actually quite complicated and difficult to play when you're just starting to learn how to play guitar. And I'd pick one. Oh, I really like this song. I'll try this. And then I'd look at the chords in the book and my fingers wouldn't do that. And I'd try for 15 minutes or so. And I'd say, you know, maybe I'll try a different song. And I went through, I don't know how many songs before I said, nope, I am going to stick with the Ramones because they have 3 chord songs and I can play this. So I did what the Ramones did, which was try to play Beatles songs and fail.
And some of the songs are so complicated, especially when they were engineered, especially the later albums, that they couldn't, nobody can play them live, right?
Right. Well, yeah, it takes an awful lot to perform them live. Yeah. But over the years in the different bands that I've been in, I have attempted a variety of Beatles cover songs after, you know, learning a little bit more about how to play. And I feel every time like I fail. Whenever I try to play a Beatles song, I always feel like, yeah, I'm really not doing this song justice. they were just great, great songwriters and also great musicians. And they did really amazing stuff and made it look effortless.
That is true. That is true.
Do you guys well, let me ask you this question first. As like playing the covers and taking requests from audiences, are there certain Beatles songs that rise above that you like, no, this one is always one that we get requested from?
No, yeah. Most of the time when people want to hear the Beatles, they say, play something by the Beatles. And it's very rarely play this specific song.
Yeah.
Which is, I should mention, with almost every other band, there's specific songs that they want to hear. It's extremely rare to have a band where people just want to hear anything by that band. And that's a testament to how famous their catalog is. I mean, people know so many Beatles songs that...
just like pick one, just yeah, do it.
I mean, nobody says, hey, do you know anything by the Bangles? I mean, anything by the Bangles, because I love it all. Nobody says that. It's Walk Like an Egyptian. That's it. Hey, Tommy Two Tone, do you know anything from any of his albums? Nope, it's just 8675309. That's the only thing they want to hear. But not so with the Beatles.
Gotcha.
The Eagles are another one of those bands, by the way.
Oh,
yeah.
Gotcha.
Only with Hotel California, and no, I can't play that.
Is there a Beatles song that you guys like? So when you get that request, is there one that's your go-to song?
Lately, we've been doing...
oh, God, just now realized the first one we learned. It's embarrassing. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm covering my mouth. No, we learned the Tiffany cover. Was it? I saw her standing there.
Well, that wasn't.
No, not that. No, that's her standing. That what is it? I think we're alone now. No, that was somebody else, wasn't it?
The first one that we ever tried to learn, though, you're forgetting. We tried to learn Eleanor Rigby.
Oh yeah.
And
yeah, that was brutal. That didn't go
that
well.
That did not go well. I believe we even. Unfortunately for the crowd that night, I think we tried to play it live once. And
I feel sick to the stomach thinking about that.
Oh, it was such a beautiful song ruined by such incompetence. We were not up to the task. But these days, if we're asked to play a Beatles song, we do play Saw Her Standing.
Yeah, there. Yeah, yeah.
That's a different one.
That's a different one. That one is much easier to fake our way through.
Yeah, I think Mike, you've seen us do that.
Yes, I think I have. Yes.
Yeah, you're like, yeah, I'll refrain from saying that I saw that.
No, absolutely. I like, but I don't usually, I'm not, Yeah, I don't usually request things, so I just sort of listen and accept. it's all good. I can honestly say I've never walked away from one of your shows disappointed. So
leave them with a smile.
I usually
wish I could say the same thing, Mike.
Well, you guys are the ones that are, you know, obviously you guys are the ones that are playing, so you guys know what you're doing a little bit more than I do. So, but
go so far as to say that.
But as far as, okay, so yeah, just trying to get a handle on it. Do you guys have any, and Michelle, we'll start with you. Do you have any like fun Beatles moments or things about the Beatles that you just find really cool over the years? Like that you've just been like, hey, that's cool.
Fun Beatles moments.
Not fun, but I mean, just ones that like personally you thought like, that's really, like other than their music, is there something about the Beatles and you know, their rise to pop culture that
I can't point to anything
specific. You have just notes here.
That's not a Beatles moment.
Gotcha.
What I was kind of wanting to talk about, Ricky talked about the fact that the US and UK releases the song order and the song selection is different. And part of the reason for that is at the time the Beatles came out in the States, the folk rock craze was going on, and Capitol wanted to market the Beatles as folk rockers. And they wanted to downplay all the R&B influences that the Beatles had. The Beatles loved R&B. They wanted to be an R&B band. They loved Motown. George Harrison was asked who his favorite band was in the whole world, and he said Martha Reeves and the Vandellas. And
so much he stole from them.
Yeah. McCartney has said that the melody he wrote for In My Life was taken from Smokey Robinson and the Miracles. There's just all kinds of little influences that Motown had on the Beatles. And even when they got into Revolver is the album where everybody says they left the world behind and they became their own point of reference at this time. The Beatles will probably tell you, no, that's not true. And it was kind of obscured in the U.S. anyway by the fact that Got to Get You Into My Life was left off of that record and some older tracks were put onto it.
To make it more palatable?
To make it
so they could mold the studio it was into scared. The
folk rock
gotcha.
Thing. Because that was big. The Mr. Tambourine Man, the Birds were big. Stuff like that. That's what Capitol was going for with the Beatles. And the Beatles were busy nicking Motown and loving it. And so things like the horn chart on Got to Get You Into My Life, that was Motown. And Marvin Gaye and Stevie Wonder in particular took very careful note of the control that the Beatles were able to exert over their own career. They stopped touring. They told the record label a lot of what they were going to do, and they used that to leverage a lot of power from Berry Gordy at Motown. And Stevie Wonder's career in particular probably would have been very different if he didn't have the Beatles as sort of an influence on how to take artistic control.
Oh, wow. So there were not just the music was influential, but the way they went about to change the business.
Yes.
Wow.
Very oh, yeah. Cool. Marketing. Also, they merchandised like no band before them had.
No, not at all. The rise of Beatlemania led to so much merchandise. It was not even funny. And, you know, when you're thinking about it, because they had were one of the first bands to have lunch boxes, to have a cartoon after them, and it's just amazing to think of all the different things. And I'm not talking Yellow Submarine cartoon. I'm thinking they had a Saturday morning Beatles cartoon.
Yeah, they did.
Right.
They yeah. Did. I can only imagine back then when you've seen how crazy everybody got in the United States got over Elvis. You might have been thinking, nobody can be this big ever again. Like, this just happens like a one-time thing. And then the Beatles hit and you're like, wow, something happened that's even bigger than that. I mean, obviously, I mean, there's so much made of, you know, the famous Ed Sullivan Show performance, and when they hit the States, and it was just, I mean, it was huge. I can't even imagine that now.
Well, the cool thing about it is my aunt actually went to one of the first tours that they did when right after Ed Sullivan. And when she was at the show, she said the women, including herself, was screaming so much you couldn't even hear the Beatles at the concert because the sound system was not prepared for what was coming.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I think they said they couldn't hear themselves.
No, they couldn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, those early concerts, well, even the later concerts, I can't. Yeah, I mean, so many people screaming, I can't even imagine it was a great experience.
Well, that's why they stopped touring, basically.
When you hear the recordings from those shows, though, they were still amazing. They couldn't even hear each other, but they could still play.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You see something like the Ed Sullivan Show, and or some of their other concerts. There's a documentary out there that was done by Ron Howard not that long ago about the Beatles' early years when they start, you know, all the way till they stopped touring, I think in 65. And, you know, basically it just got too much for them because they had to keep on playing bigger and bigger venues to fit all the fans in. And, you know, when they literally were playing Shea Stadium, they barely, you know, it was built for the sound system was built for a baseball game. It wasn't built for a concert with all these screaming fans who started rushing the field. The Beatles had to be rushed out from the stage in ambulances to, you know, get away from the fans.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That is, yeah. I mean, that goes beyond, I mean, obviously they were influential musicians, but as pop culture figures, they were, I mean, their popularity was beyond anything that we've ever seen, probably. I mean, to this day.
No, really. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's why you didn't see them ever tour after that. The only live performance you ever saw the Beatles do after 1965 was in 1970 when they did the Let It Be tour on the top of the recording studio.
Which almost didn't happen.
Yeah. That's true. It almost didn't because of the tension and everything.
The tension between the band members?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And it was literally cold that day as well.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I read way, way more than I probably ever should have about that day. The fact that there's so much information available about that day is just insane. But basically, what it came down to is Paul McCartney wanted to do it. And John sort of said, all right, we're going to do it. And if Paul and John wanted to do something, then that was just the way it was. I thought that was really interesting. But from what I understand, George didn't particularly want to do it.
Well, a lot of them that were already at that point were already pretty much checked out from the Beatles. And, you know, it was like almost grudgingly that they did it. They had, you know, if you ever see the movie Let It Be, because they actually have a full concert, the full concert they did as a movie. Billy Preston is up there and some other musicians. It's a true classic concert. But you could see between everybody, they didn't want to be together at that point. They were, you know, they still performed beautifully together, but you could tell the personalities just were frayed at that point.
Yeah, Paul still had hope. I think Paul was still hoping that if they could play together again, that they could bring it back around, that in their hearts, they were all still truly musicians. And once they started doing that and getting away from all of the business end, that maybe they could bring it back around and keep it together. But I think by that point, George already had maybe not one foot out the door, but both feet out the door. And it was just a matter of him, you know, going through the motions.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
do you guys, should I ask the girly question? Do you guys have a favorite Beatle?
Wow. That's like asking, do you have a favorite child?
they each one like brought so much to the table, obviously. The only one I've ever seen live was Ringo, because I saw one of the Ringo's All-Star Band tours in the late 80s, mm-hmm. early 90s. It was early 90s. So, and he played a couple Beatles songs there, of course. His, of course. But that's the only Beatle I've seen live.
I've seen Paul McCartney live.
I've seen three. Oh, wow. I've seen three of the four Beatles.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to say George just because he doesn't seem to get as much attention. So I'm going to say George.
The dark horse. Just,
the dark horse.
The dark horse.
I'm like, poor guy. He's the Beatle that most people can't name.
I'm pretty sure most people can name every Beatle.
I don't know.
Yeah, come on. You know, that's the band Paul McCartney was in before he played with Michael Jackson, you know.
Well, yeah.
I think that even that statement is dated. Now it's that's the band that old guy who is on stage with whatever the rapper's name was that he was with recently used to be in.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
That rapper guy sure did give that old man a chance. You know, now that he's been on stage with him, his career is really going to go somewhere.
Well, that was, you know, growing up, it was, oh, Paul McCartney. Oh, wait, wasn't he in a band before he was with Wings? You know.
Well, Paul's gotten, I think, out of all of them, I mean, he's been at the forefront, but he's paid a huge price for that because growing up, it was one of those things where you either really liked Paul McCartney or you really didn't.
Oh, yeah.
There was that whole, like, you know, Paul McCartney's too poppy. It's blah, 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 blah. He's no substance. And the real, you know, music is the real genius is John Lennon, you know, that kind of thing. And yeah, Paul got like, yeah, kind of a bad rep from a lot of people.
Oh, sure. It was interesting because they, you know, Paul, you know, has gone through so many different stages and people, you know, say he was the lighter, you know, the poppier of the two between him and John. And, you know, John was more, had the more serious, more, but if you listen to some of, you know, John's stuff, even, you know, he had some of the poppy stuff too.
Yeah. I think, you know, looking
heavier.
Yeah. Well, and when they tried to imitate each other, they ended up like writing like really brilliant songs that are often attributed. It's like, I know that there's a few songs that are like, yeah, that can't be a Paul song because it just sounds like something John would write, and in vice versa, you know?
Mm-hmm. Of course. And
for whatever reason, and Ricky, you might be able to speak to this more than anybody, but for whatever reason, they decided early on that they would both take credit for the songwriting, which I know has led to some complications later on too.
Well, I think my answer to the question, which is your favorite Beatle? To me, it's not like which is your favorite child. To me, it's like which is your favorite leg of the racehorse? There's four legs. Which one do you like best? Well, I think unless you've got all four working together, you just don't have the same thing.
Yeah.
It took the combination of these four individuals to make the Beatles.
Because each one of them solo career is pretty impressive, but yet together, I mean, it's all together there, right? It's like it feels like, I don't want to say there's something missing, which is one of their solo work, but I don't think solo wise any of them achieved what they all did combined together.
Oh, not at all. But the thing is, even after all the time, the magic was still there. I remember, I think it was the early 2000s when they released another of the Beatles remasters or something, and they took the John song that was never released called Real Love, and the three remaining Beatles at the time played on it. And it, when it came out, it put goosebumps on my arms and everything because it captured the magic even after all this time. And it was just like, wow, the things they could have accomplished, or, you know, musically, if they could have gotten back together and let the egos go past and such. It would have been interesting to see what would have happened there.
Do you think, like, you know, I mean, I know it's speculation, but do you think that they, you know, would have ever gotten back together, especially if, you know, we hadn't lost John so stupidly?
You can't ever say that. Yeah, you can't say that. They had so many different offers monetarily or financially, you know, with, you know, money and people offering to reunite them on for just even one event, or even, you know, other shows, or, you know, concert promoters, or, you know, even Jimmy Carter was trying to get the Beatles to play together for something to benefit like World Hunger or something. And they just wouldn't do it. And I don't know who was fighting against it or what, but, you know, it would be interesting to see what would have happened, because, you know, other bands had broken up. Look at the Rolling Stones had broken up. The Who had broken up, you know, all these other classic bands. And
the Eagles. Hell
would freeze over together before the Eagles played together again. And look what happened.
The Hell Frozen Overture.
No, they won't go away.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, it's like, just this past, like last year, what we saw the original lineup of Guns N' Roses get back together, right? Thought that would happen.
But I also feel like it might have cheapened everything with the Beatles a little bit if they would have gotten back together, you know, like the Eagles did or something.
Well, and it's hard to imagine, too, even if they had gotten back together, it might have been a one-time thing where they might have played a couple songs, it would have been nice and everything, but really, what makes the Beatles Beatles is them working together and changing everything, right? So, like, even a one-time concert just would have been, you know, one of those nice things, but it wouldn't really have been having the Beatles back.
No, exactly, because the music had evolved past the Beatles.
I think it would have been a lot like when Led Zeppelin got together and did this couple of shows with Jason Bonham on drums. I was going to say a few years back, but it's been a while now. You know, they did a couple of shows and they released a DVD and they released a CD and they made a big deal about it. But really, it was just these same guys 30 years later getting back together playing the same songs. And as cool as that is, and I don't want to downplay that being cool, it's really not the same as going into the studio and writing something.
Well, exactly.
And if the Beatles had done that, like you were just saying, I mean, so much time has gone past. As much of an influence as they still are, I don't think that they would have even had a shot at being on the cutting edge anymore. You know, it would have just been a nostalgia thing.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I couldn't have seen the Beatles surviving new wave or disco or things like that. Yeah. Each one of them had their own albums during that period. And don't get me wrong, they probably would have been fantastic into the MTV era, because they were pretty much the ones who started producing music videos back in the 60s.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they would have been perfect for that. But, you know, like we've been saying, if they would have gotten back together, it would have had to be Paul and George and Ringo and John all writing together, all new stuff as the Beatles, for them to be truly back. Not, oh, here's another, you know, oldie show or something like that. And that's I felt what last time I saw Paul McCartney in concert. Oh, let's go for a greatest hits thing, you know. And that's the way it felt, because when he played his new stuff, everyone was just sitting on their hands pretty much. They were waiting for him just to play the stuff you knew.
Right. Yeah.
It's kind of true with a lot of artists. We found that out seeing other classic artists. When they want to do their new stuff, people just don't want to hear it. They just want to hear the old ballads and pop music.
Exactly.
All right. So, man, we're barely scratching the surface, but unfortunately, it's come time to wrap up our segment. But before we go, I want all of us to give sort of a last thought on the Beatles in general and recommend something for our listeners to check out, whether it be an album, a song, a book, a movie, something that's Beatles related that that people should definitely check out. Michelle, do you have anything?
Well, it's always a lot of fun to go on YouTube and just watch some of the Ringo's All-Star Band performances. He gets the good people. They play the hits, and he gets the good people. It's always fun.
I had a fun time at that show. That was a really good show. He does get good people, and like I said, they do a couple of Beatles tracks, to be sure. I Get By, obviously, is the big one at the end. So that's always nice. Bambi?
You know what? I'm going to actually, this might be more of a challenge for myself. I'm going to go back and try to listen to the soundtrack again and see if it's as bad as I remember it being.
We apologize maybe, first now.
You know, maybe it won't be that bad now. I don't know.
Some of it is. Some of it might be. Some of it's, I do remember like two or three songs being pretty good.
The Alice Cooper's not bad. The Earth, Wind & Fire, the Aerosmith. Probably those three.
Did Alice Cooper do a song on
that? I think he did.
Yeah.
That sounds like it would be cool. It's just.
Yeah.
George Burns singing. Yeah.
Fixing a hole. Oh god, Steve Martin chewing scenery.
Oh, Steve Martin singing Maxwell Hammer. Yeah.
Ricky, what about you?
I'm gonna say Revolver is one of my favorite albums by the Beatles. I mean, I have an awful lot of favorite albums by the Beatles. Revolver is one of my favorites. But the one, and that's the one that I think a lot of people see as the turning point, but the one I'm going to recommend that people go back and check out is Rubber Soul, because you don't hear people talk about that one as much, but it is, I won't say underrated, you know, it's the Beatles, everybody knows they're great, but Rubber Soul is one you don't hear people talk about as often, and I think it sometimes gets lost in the shuffle when, you know, Sgt. Pepper and the White Album and Revolver are getting mentioned. So I'm going to recommend that folks go back and take a listen to Rubber Soul.
Oh, Rubber Soul good is choice. Just pure gold.
Yeah, Rubber Soul and Revolver, I think, are my two favorite albums. So, yeah, I would co-sign on that big time. Mike, what about you?
Cool.
Okay, I have two, actually. Of course, I'm going to say Sgt. Pepper. It's a gateway drug completely. It's like, at the time, it is like nothing anyone had ever heard before.
And I think it's awesome. It's usually referenced as the standard, right? The best album of all time. I mean, certainly people can argue this and that. I've seen other things pop up here and there. But really, like over the course of my lifetime, I think that one consistently is like considered the greatest album.
Oh, it is. For the later half of the 20th century, completely. It is, you know, it is pure genius.
So the movie, not so good.
No,
the album, really good.
Yes, and let me rectify what I have to say. It's Sgt. Pepper by the Beatles, not Sgt. Pepper the soundtrack. So you have to make sure, because I don't want people coming after me, I bought the soundtrack favor and it sucked, you know. So the other,
you
but
just, you fair. Point to Bambi and say that was her pick.
Exactly, we will point at Bambi on that one. But the other thing is, I do recommend that the people, if you want to get into the Beatles, if you're curious about the Beatles and never have listened to it, Beatles Love, all the way. It is the last project that George Martin actually worked on for the Beatles before he passed away. And it is true classic. He took every one of the Beatles songs that were in the show and remastered them and remixed them. And we haven't even touched on George Martin and the techniques and the work that he did for the Beatles. He did things that had never, ever been done before.
Yeah, you could have a whole show just on how George Martin affected the Beatles.
Oh, exactly. That could be a whole episode of talking about the Beatles itself. And it's amazing to be able to do that, what he did. And so Beatles Love is definitely worth it. And if you're ever in Vegas, you know, go see the show. It's mind blowing. And the way they did it, I went in there very skeptical, being a Beatles fan. I walked out of there sold. I was like, that was just awesome. So definitely worth checking out.
On the topic of George Martin, I'm going to co-sign on that too. And I think one of the things that, I guess one of the last projects that he worked on was a documentary series called Soundbreaking, right? In which he talked about different elements of producing albums and music. And each one, I think there's 8 episodes, is that right? Something like that?
Something like that. 8 or 9.
8 or 9 episodes, and each one focuses on a specific genre or theme or element of producing. And in it, you'll learn more, like you'll learn about other acts to be sure and other things that came out, but also just how much work went into making those classic Beatles albums. A lot of the things that he did either innovate or I don't want to say exploit, that sounds like a bad word, but incorporate, that's a better word, into pop culture, into music, into pop music, into rock and roll, into the Beatles sound. It's really, really a good series. And I hope, even though he's not with us anymore, I hope it continues, because that was some really good stuff.
Yeah, thank you for mentioning that, because that series is definitely worth checking out.
Yeah, you can buy that, right? Because it was a PBS thing, but you can buy it
too,
right?
I think you can download it on iTunes, and I think they also produced Blu-ray for it. So yeah, that is highly recommended.
Yeah, good stuff. I mean, I knew that there was a lot of work went into producing albums, but man, that really opened my eyes to how much like a producer doesn't just sit there and go, yeah, that sounded okay.
Yeah.
So, well, very cool. Well, like I said, we just scratched the surface, but that's all we've got right now for the Beatles. So thank you guys very much for joining us. And we will be right back. We will be right back with the ESO Network Con Report.
Girls Take. I'm your host, Angela, and this week, this Geek Girl is talking about all the fandom-related patterns that you can now buy to make your cosplay super epic at your local fabric store. Cosplay has become super popular right now, way more so than it was 20 years ago. There are now conventions all over the place, and one of my favorites, Dragon Con, is coming up. So, if you know how to sew or have wanted to learn, now is the best time with all the fun geeky-themed patterns out there to help you make an awesome costume. Simplicity and McCall's both have cosplay patterns out, from DC Comics patterns of classic characters and also the new DC Bombshells characters, to video game characters from Final Fantasy and Zelda, to Marvel Comics, Disney princesses, and anime characters. You can basically find something that will work for whatever character you want to cosplay. I know I'm a big fan of searching for patterns that work for the costumes that I'm doing, but for some, having these all in one place will make making their costumes super easy for their upcoming conventions. Also, the patterns can seem expensive, but if you wait for sales, most fabric stores will put them on sale different weeks, so you can make your costumes while also not breaking the bank. Well, thanks for listening to A Geek Girl's Take. What will I talk about next week? Well, you're going to have to listen to find out. Get back to where you want me now.
Hey everyone, welcome back. Now it's time for the ESO Network Con Report.
Con! Well, we don't have any events for the month of January where you can find ESO folks. We're just wandering around aimlessly, apparently, in January. But in February, there are some specific events that you can find all kinds of ESO Network folks at, starting February 16th through the 18th. At Gallifrey One, That's in Los Angeles, California. It's a big, big, big Doctor Who convention, maybe one of the biggest in the country. And amongst the masses, you will find the mayor of Chickentown, Felicity from the Flopcast. She will be attending that. And I don't know if she's going to be dressed as a rubber chicken. She may be dressed as a rubber chicken like she was at Aresia. So if so, take plenty of pictures. Send them to us. Very happy that she will be there once again. I know, Mike, you've been there before. It's a great convention. One of these days I will be going there as well. I can't call myself a Doctor Who fan without going to Gallifrey One at least once.
Oh, it's definitely worth visiting once. It is an experience, and it is truly some of the best Doctor Who fans on the West Coast that you could find.
Absolutely. It's going to be a great time. And that same weekend, if you can't get in, because Gallifrey One does sell out quite fast when they go on sale. So if you can't get into Gallifrey One and you're looking for a show to go to, if you're on the East Coast and the DC metro area, you can check out Katsucon. That is February 16th through the 18th as well. And our own geek girl herself, Angela Pritchett, will be there, probably sporting a ukulele, maybe in costume, maybe not, but definitely want to check out Angela when at Katsucon. She's also going to be working the next weekend, February 23rd through the 25th, at Mysticon, and that is in Roanoke, Virginia. So she doesn't have too far to go, just a little bit of travel between DC and Roanoke, Virginia. She will be at both those shows. Meanwhile, at February 24th through the 25th, that is the Huntsville Comic and Pop Culture Expo. It's in Huntsville, Alabama. And Mike, director Faber, will be there. He will also be accompanied by Lacey, our honorary co-host of the Earth Station One podcast. They have a table, and I understand you'll be participating in panels as well. Is that correct?
As of right now, yes. I am assuming I will be on panels. When I find out what they are, you guys at home will be the first to find out.
Absolutely. That's going to be a great time. And then in March 9th through the 11th is Toylanta. That is in Atlanta, Georgia. And it's also referred to as Joelanta still. So they do a lot of G.I. Joe programming. Haven't forgotten that. They're just expanding out. So they've got Botlanta, Toylanta, and all things good toy fun. And Mike and I will be there. We'll be presenting and recording a live podcast of the Earth Station One show. Our topic will be Funko figures. I know, very surprised that we haven't done that already. But where could we do it? Where's the best place to do it? Toylanta, of course. And we'll be lending our talents as panelists.
Talents? Talents?
I know. I was stretching it there. But we'll be panelists on other panels as well. So we'll be appearing on other panels as well. So if you are going to Toylanta, check out one of our panels. Say howdy to us. The following weekend after that, March 18th, in the same hotel, which is the Marriott Century Center, because we won't leave. We'll just stay there all week, is the one-day Atlanta Comic Convention. It is the first of the one-day shows this year. Usually Wes and them put on four of those a year. So the first one is March 18th. Fun little show. And we also want to point out that later in March, at the next weekend, is March 23rd through the 25th, which is another Doctor Who convention. It's Regeneration Who. That's in Baltimore, Maryland. That one's getting to be quite big as well. So Gallifrey One's got some competition as to what the biggest Doctor Who convention is in the States. But Angela Pritchett will be attending that one, so she'll be able to report on how big that show is. And last but certainly not least, and also that weekend, March 24th through the 25th, is South Carolina Comic Con. SC Comic Con, for short, it is in Greenville, South Carolina. It is a great show. Mike and I will both be there. There'll also be some other ESO Network folks, including, I believe, Nerd Bliss will be there. Is that correct, Mike?
Oh, yeah. Both Chris and his lovely wife, Tina, will be there, sitting at our table and just not gawking and walking around and laughing at people.
Well, laughing at people, that's just mean. But the rest of it, yeah, there's plenty to do at SC Comic Con. We love the show, and we are so thankful
to Robert and everybody at SC Comic Con. If you have not listened to the Con Report yet, the Dragon Con Report, then let me mention to you now is that the South Carolina Comic Con, at least for the next few months, is one of the official sponsors of the 2018 Dragon Con Report. So you can find out more information about SC Comic Con at their website, sccomiccon.com. And you'll be hearing more information about that. Robert will be on to talk about some of the guests and some of the other programming that they have. And we'll have some reports in the Dragon Con Report as well. We are very, very happy to have them as sponsors for one of our network shows. And we're very, very happy to be attending the show. It's a show that I was there the first year of it, and I've only had to miss one due to a unfortunate incident in the family. But the show is great. I can't speak highly enough about this show.
The show will go on no matter what.
Absolutely. And we will be there March 24th through the 25th. So if you have a show that you are wanting us to help promote or participate in, to do panels or whatnot, please reach out to us. And if you've got a show that you're going to or you've been to and you want to rave about it, also contact us, because we love talking about conventions.
So that's going to wrap up another episode of the Earth Station One podcast. I want to thank our crew for being here. Mr. Mike, I do appreciate it as always.
And as always, it's my pleasure.
Anything you want to shout out about, my friend?
I do want to shout out. We got to give a big shout out to friend of the station, longtime friend of the station, really. And congratulations to our good friend Phantom Troublemaker, a.k.a. Dave, for celebrating 200 episodes of his podcast and doing it as only Dave could do it. I know that soon he will be releasing the audio version and the video. I heard the video came out pretty good, of his episode 200, which was a extravaganza, which was amazing, and which Ricky and Bambi took part in as well, with some third guy that didn't look familiar to me. Like some mustache dude that played almost as good as Jazz. But that was a great night. It was great fun. I can't wait to everybody who's going to hear it, I'm sure, on his audio show, but I think he's going to release the video too. So that's going to be cool. Although you might have to sign up to his Patreon page to watch it. I wouldn't blame him if he did that, and it's worth the money. So congratulations to Dave for 200 episodes of Needless Things.
Yay. You're here. Yay, Dave. Just remember when he first started episode one on the ESO network.
So absolutely, yes. He is a spinoff.
Yes, he is.
But he's spun off now that it's one of those spinoffs that you won't recognize. It's like when people say Maude was a spinoff of All in the Family. What? That's crazy. Like, they just don't, like, yeah. He's our Maude.
Mm. Well, it's him better better than him saying he's our Mayberry RFD or something. And of course, let's thank our guests for being here. Ricky, thank you so much, sir.
Oh, thank you for having me on the show. I love to talk about the Beatles.
Hey, it's always fun doing that. When we told you we were doing the Beatles, you were like, I'm there.
Yeah, absolutely. That was my response.
It was awesome. You didn't even go, what night, where, how, why. You just said, I'm there. It's pretty awesome when you could do that. And Bambi, thank you, of course.
For being clueless. That's cool. Yeah, that's cool.
You are so not clueless, my dear.
So, glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
So do you guys want to do some promotions real quick?
Well, the general promotion is just check us out at radiocult.com. We've got videos there right on the site. Radio Cult, that's our band. Go check us out.
Nope. Yes. Appreciate it so much. And you guys being here. And if you guys want a great time seeing some amazing music, please check out Radio Cult. These guys are awesome. And of course, Michelle, thank you so, so much.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And always great having your your iconic rock blog on our show, of course. Anything you want to shout out about real quick?
Well, I finally figured out, because I'm really a stable genius and nothing gets by me, that I could put topics I talk about on my blog. I could integrate a blog and a podcast segment. Wow, what a concept. So I did that, and I talked about the Happy Fits. Everyone should check out the Happy Fits. And then I put another post up yesterday about why the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame may not be working too hard to get away from the classic rock, because boomers spend a lot of money.
You're just realizing that now? That's pretty...
No, I realized it. Other people haven't.
Ah, gotcha. It completely makes sense, though, but you gotta take it where you get it. So, yep. Very cool. All right, my turn for a shout-out. I'm going to give a shout-out to me. That's right, folks. I am shouting out about me. That's why I do my show every week, because it's all about me. Okay. I want to shout-out to myself. I have been graciously asked to be a guest once again at DragonCon. So I am gladly going to be going back and to DragonCon 2018 as a guest, and very happy to announce that here on the show and share it with my friends. You know, if I couldn't do that,
your autograph,
you would be surprised. I was actually asked for my autograph for the first time last year. I was like, what? And somebody had an ESO Windows sticker with them that they never put on their car, and I actually autographed it. I was like, wow, I'm touched. It was actually pretty cool. And I was just, you know, this is, you know, a few years now that I've been a guest, and I love doing panels. And for me, it's like the more panels, the better. I think last year I did 15. I'm going to try to see about breaking that this year.
Wow, so, yeah.
And it's like, sleep. I don't need sleep over 4 days. That's for wusses. So DragonCon 2018, here we come. And speaking of that, this week, the new episode of the DragonCon Report will be going live. That's right. The ESO, actually, it's not the ESO anymore. It's the DragonCon Con Report, episode 1 for February, will be going live. And before you know it, DragonCon is going to be here. So join us on the podcast when all your friends could talk all about it, start giving you advice, telling you how to get prepared, and maybe even how to find a hotel room. It's still possible at DragonCon every once in a while. Maybe. But, you know, it's always great to be able to do that. So, of course, we want to thank you guys for listening, as always. It was a lot of fun talking about the Beatles tonight. This is why we could do this type of stuff. It's because of you guys. You guys help support the station. You guys help talk up the station. People, you know, oh, I told my friends about us. I tell so-and-so about you guys. Or I play it at my work and my coworkers listen to it with me. You know, people come to me and tell me this kind of thing. And it's awesome. But we need more of that. That's right, folks. We need people to subscribe to the show once a week, twice a week, you know, listen to every download, every episode. We would appreciate it so much. And, you know, there's various shows now on the ESO network that you can listen to, but I'm kind of, you know, partial to Earth Station One. This has been my baby for 7.5 years. I've been doing this the whole time with Mike, and it's been pretty amazing. And you can subscribe to the show anywhere podcasts are found now, you know. And if there's a podcast engine, if you're on iOS, if you're on Android, on your laptop, you can subscribe to us. It's pretty darn awesome that you can do that now. And while you're subscribing to the show, why not leave us a little feedback? 5 stars, that's all we ask is 5 stars. You know, say you like us, tell people what you like. And if you don't like us, you know, remember, our name is The Nerdist. Remember that. So with that, please help support the station by going to the Amazon link right on the ESO network webpage, right at the top there. There's a link for Amazon.com. That's how we, you know, can do all this. We have, you know, various ways, and we got a new way we're going to be supporting the station. We're going to come to you with next week. Oh, there's big news to talk about, all about that, that yes, you can get involved with helping support the station. And that's all I'm going to say at this point. But next week, we will be talking all about that. All right. Speaking of next week, we are going to the fine ship Red Dwarf. That's right. Season 12 is here, folks. We are going to be reviewing season 12 of Red Dwarf, and we're going to be seeing Rimmer and Lister and Cat and Crichton, all brand new adventures. And, you know, did we like it? Did we not? Join us here next week to find out. But until then, my name is Mike Faber, and we will see you here next time on the Earth Station One podcast. Peace, and we are done. Ta-da!
You've been listening to Earth Station One, a weekly podcast that explores the many worlds of all things geek. Please write us at esopodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. And if we find what you say interesting, we'll put it up on the air. If you've enjoyed our show, please rate us or leave feedback for us up on iTunes. And while you're there, subscribe to our show or any of the ESO Network podcasts. We can also be found up on Stitcher Radio or wherever fine podcasts are found. ESO is also available up on most social media sites like Facebook, Twitter, and so many more. To learn more about ESO, our website is esopodcast.com. The show is produced by Calico Productions. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you here next time on the Earth Station One podcast. Peace. Who is it for? All the lonely people.
Where do they... This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek. Classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.